Glenn has access to that. Unfortunately, it hasn't been working for me, so I don't see it right now. So I'm relying on Glenn. I tried logging in, but for some reason, the last few weeks, it hasn't worked. All right. Glenn, why don't you go through the meeting view and just communicate who's on the call and where they're from as far as constituency or company or whatever?
I'll do that. Chuck, can we just start the recording, operator?
Thank you for remembering that. Do I need to, should I dial star zero or?
Perhaps star zero, Chuck, yes.
Please have your passcode and conference leader's name available. A coordinator will assist you momentarily.
Recorded.
Hello? Am I back on?
Yes, you're back on, but the operator hasn't said anything.
Yeah. Nor have I heard anything.
Well, I heard a corded.
Yeah, I did too, and I wondered if it has the recording started.
Hello, sorry, this is the operator.
Yes. Has the recording started?
Yes, madam.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, so everybody is aware that this is being recorded and that the MP3 will be distributed. So if you don't like that, your option is to get off the call, which isn't very many options, but just want everybody to be aware.
Right. I'll go through the list. Olga Cavelli, Nominating Committee.
Yes.
Steve Del Bianco, Commercial BC. Chuck Gomes is the leader of the group. David Maher, Registry Constituency. Alan Greenberg is ALAC liaison. Tony Harris, ISP. Wendy Seltzer, ALAC liaison to the board. Liz Gaster, staff. Patrick Jones, staff. Lee Eugen, ITC. Steve Metallis, ITC. Steve, I've mentioned you twice. James Bladell, Registrar, and Tim Reese, Registrar.
Thank you, everyone, for joining the call. Is there anyone whose name was not called? Okay. Any concerns about the agenda that was distributed? Okay. Then let's move on. Our task, an item 4 on the agenda, and hopefully everybody has the agenda in front of you. It's on the wiki and I think was distributed otherwise as well. I'm not going to read the task. I think all of you can read unless somebody really wants me to. It's really a pretty narrow task. I did mention on that agenda one key reference document. That's the summary of public suggestions. So that is something that you... may want to reference when we're doing this, and so certainly you might find that useful to have that available. And let me get back to where my right screen here as I flipped around here and clicking to that document. There we go. Okay.
So Chuck, it's Liz, and I was just going to offer when you get down to the hypotheses, if you want me to edit for you, I'm happy to edit.
I probably will. So thank you. And what you may want, do it whatever way is easiest for you. If you're more comfortable doing it in the wiki, that's okay.
Yeah, I'm going to try to just do it in the wiki as we talk. And if I can't get something done, I'll go into edit mode now. For anyone else who might be editing.
Thanks, Liz.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. Okay, so our deliverable is going to be a report listing the hypotheses for the WHOIS study recommendations, and those came from the public comments and the GAC input and so forth. In some cases, it's probably going to be relatively easy to state those hypotheses because the submissions were pretty clear on the hypothesis. In other cases, it's a little more challenging, and we're going to work together to try and formulate wording of the hypotheses that we think accurately reflects the proposed study. I did take a first crack. I actually did this in Paris and I did a little bit of editing them since then, but before I distributed them to this group. just to help get us started. We can totally throw mine out the window and start over when we come to them. So, and that's perfectly okay. My suggested approach on this is that we examine each suggested study one at a time, and then try and formulate a one sentence, brief sentence hypothesis, worded in such a way that it could be tested and either confirmed or refuted or whatever. Just for simplicity and to help get us started, we'll use my draft list of hypotheses, and see if we want to change those, throw them out and start over or whatever for each one, but we'll take one at a time. My intent is to try and reach maximum consensus on the wording of each one. If we need to, in some cases, I may get a couple volunteers to go back and work on the wording of some and come back before our next meeting. We'll see whether we need to do that as we go, but that's certainly an option so that we can maximize our efficiency. Any problems with that approach?
Alan, I have a question. The resolution said once we come back with the list, council will then decide which, if any, warrant actual studies. That sounds like the work of yet another working group, but ignoring that, should we be making any attempt to merge them together where clearly several hypotheses or several of the submitted studies really could be the same study with, you know, multiple, with
yeah, I think
more variations?
I think that would be wise to do. In fact, if you look at what I did, there are some cases where I kind of did that. I saw that they were kind of the same. Whether I did it right or not, we can decide. But yeah, I think that as long as we, I think what we need to do, and Liz will help us in this regard, is to make sure that we just tie in the references to the proposed studies so that people can make the connection.
Okay, because I think we need to minimize the work that has to be done, and if we're going through the complete list one by one, we should try to get any reasonable things done that we can at the same time.
Exactly. That's a good point, Alan.
Chuck, this is Steve Metallis. I have a question also. So one document you didn't include was the 22nd of May report of the previous WHOIS study group. Is that document totally inoperative or totally irrelevant to our work here?
No, it is not inoperative. It's still what I tried to do is keep it real simple to facilitate our task. To the extent that it's useful to go back to that one, that's perfectly legitimate, and I encourage it. Yeah, and that may be the case in some cases. For simplicity of referring of reference, I started to link that one too, Steve, and then I said, well, let's see, am I going to confuse people? I particularly want them to tie in the study numbers and so forth from that one document that came out of the other document. So, but that's fine.
Okay, thank you.
And Chuck, it's Steve Del Bianco. One clarifying question. The work group that worked on the May group that Steve Metallis just mentioned, we took on an additional task, which was to prioritize the studies, not just to list which ones to do, but to prioritize them. There's nothing in your current proposed agenda that indicates that we should prioritize, and that wasn't part of our resolution.
That's not
necessary, but I'm just asking whether that's inferred or...
No, it is not. In fact, the motion did not ask us to do any prioritization. It's really a pretty simple task, and that is to make sure we have clearly written out the hypotheses that could be tested. So that when the council looks at this, okay, they can read a hypothesis and say, now would that give us information that would possibly be useful to us in whatever we decide to do going forward, and therefore may be worth spending some money on to get the hypothesis tested.
Got it. And that means there would be no inferred priority by the order in which we do them.
That is correct. Okay. Okay, then let's just briefly talk about meetings. The plan right now is to just use this time on Tuesdays for however long we need, and we'll probably have a little bit of feel for that after this meeting today. I don't think it'll take very many meetings, and certainly we may be able to do some work in between to speed that up even further. Are there any huge objections to this time on Tuesdays going forward? Okay. Go ahead.
Chuck, this is Steve. I did put a comment on the social text workspace on this item, which was your point 7B, we will meet until we finish. I didn't know whether that meant that each meeting is open-ended in time or...
No.
As many meetings as we need to finish the job, or just what did you mean there?
Yeah, we're going to meet today until we're done. No, we'll keep it to a reasonable time limit. In fact, several people, I don't know if you were on, Steve, when Wendy made a comment, and I think Olga did too, hour and 15 minutes today, maybe all we can do today, and we'll judge that. Hopefully we'll get a good start on a few hypotheses today that will give us a good feel for how much time it's going to take, and if we need to do it more like an hour and a half meeting or something, we will do that.
I would just suggest that each meeting have a set ending point, because otherwise it's difficult to schedule.
Okay. Well, let's generally, I think you can do an hour and a half pretty well and still be productive. An hour is probably a little more ideal. Does anybody have a problem if we generally think of an hour and a half for these meetings?
Well, that could just be the answer to that.
Okay. Then Glenn, let's assume an hour and a half of these meetings, and we'll probably cut this one a little bit short because of some people's demands today.
Thank you, Chuck.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. All right. If there are no further, and if you miss a meeting, please assume the individual responsibility of coming up to speed in terms of what you missed. You'll be able to listen to an MP3 recording. I will try, hopefully within 24 hours or less, generally I'll try to do it the same day, to give a quick little summary that I'll distribute of what we accomplished in the meeting. And Liz will help me on that in terms of updating the wiki, so you'll be able to see what we did in the wiki. One of the limitations of the wiki is that... It doesn't readily show the changes made in things. But Liz, are you going to use some of the formatting conventions that we've used in other groups like this to show where changes are made?
I can, particularly, but I wasn't planning to for this. I was planning to just update as we go. So if you want to,
I think that's probably okay unless somebody objects. So
the way I think I'd need to do it is to actually, you know, in parens, include the name or something of whoever had a point. It's not quite track changes. So
yeah. Okay. All right. Do what works most efficiently there. I think
I could switch to. I mean, the thing to do would be to switch to word processing and, you know, edit in track changes if people really needed to see.
Is there a desire for that? It is sometimes.
Chuck, this is Tim.
Go ahead, Tim.
Would it be possible to just include, you know, instead of having a track of all the changes, just like the previous version and the current version, for a comparison, or?
I just don't know the wiki well enough. Can I do that? And I mean, will it retain the earlier version? I think it might.
Why don't we do this if nobody has any objection? Because we can always cut and paste into the wiki. Okay, and Liz, you're going to have the final say on this. But do you have a Word version handy that you could just use the tracking function today?
I'm going to go ahead and create one.
I have one if you want me to send it to you.
Well, sure. And then meanwhile, I'll do this too and see what you
Okay, hold on a second. I will.
Now, someone had some objection to using track changes.
Well, that's fine. We're going to transfer that over into the wiki as well. So those that don't want to use that don't have to use it. I don't think that's unreasonable. Does anybody think that's okay? So let me find that document here. I've got it up online.
Okay, I've actually got it now in Word.
You've got it. Okay, so you don't need me to send you anything.
I don't need you to send it.
Yeah.
It transferred well from the wiki, so I'm okay.
Okay, good. Then, and I'm actually going to be working off my Word version here as we go. So, all right, let's start off. Right with area one, who is Miss Youth Studies? And study number one, I have there, If anybody wants to look at the document, the main reference document, the study, submission number one was to gather data on who is misused from consumer protection bureaus and other entities who maintain data on misuse incidents reported by registrants and survey a random sample of registrants in each GTLD and selected CCTLDs. Now, what I did, and again, please don't put more stake in what I did than necessary. I just tried to facilitate it. What I put as a possible hypothesis there is there are a significant number of misuse cases involving receipt of unwanted email spam. If nothing else, my example is to illustrate what we're looking for in terms of a hypothesis that could be tested.
Chuck, this is Steve DelBianco. I was the author of study submission number one, and I wanted to clarify that the way I submitted it months ago already was summarized once in the document that Liz did, the summary, and then you made another attempt to further consolidate and summarize it for today's hypothesis. And by being two generations removed from the original, there are certain elements that get lost.
Okay.
I don't propose that everyone go back and read the gory details of the actual study submission.
And as you can tell, I didn't.
Oh, yeah. But in this instance, I thought it would be fruitful for all. If I were to read the actual hypothesis that I did submit for study number one, you'll see that there's two elements of it that have been lost in the multiple summary.
Okay.
It may not even be worth preserving, but just in case, I wanted to point it out. The way I wrote the hypothesis for study number one was, quote, public access to WHOIS data is responsible for a material number of cases of misuse that have caused harm to natural persons whose websites don't have a commercial purpose.
So
I didn't focus exclusively on spam, and I included two distinctions that weren't captured in the summary, which is that the harm I was hypothesizing about was harm to natural persons, not the legal person, and those who didn't have a commercial purpose. And the importance of that is you probably know from the previous WHOIS working groups is that legal persons or natural persons with a commercial purpose wouldn't have been entitled to the same sort of privacy protections that natural persons alone. So I was trying to preserve a lot of those important distinctions for the purpose of this. And spam was just one of the ones I brought up, but I did say that it was a material number of cases of misuse, and that I was worried about the targeting of natural persons whose websites do not have a commercial purpose.
In my opinion, Steve, that's a very well-formulated hypothesis, and I'm sorry I didn't go back to the original documents. I'll confess that I was actually developing some of these while on stage in one of the GNSO meetings to see how easy it was to do, and so I didn't have time to go back thoroughly. But does anybody disagree with just using that one-sentence hypothesis that Steve just read?
Could you read it again, Steve?
Public access to WHOIS data is responsible for a material number of cases of misuse that have caused harm to natural persons whose websites do not have a commercial purpose.
That seems to me very testable.
The only way.
And keep in mind, we're not going to get into whether you can actually do it. It's not our responsibility to decide whether the study is actually achievable, but rather, is it a clear hypothesis that could be tested, and if we tested it, we would get information that would be helpful. That's what the question that council's going to have to ask.
Quick question, if I may.
Go ahead.
Steve, do you mean to limit it to people using domain names for websites, or to make it more general whose internet use does not have commercial purpose?
Good question, Steve. You want to respond?
The former. Which is to say, limiting it to those whose registration of a website and the provision of WHOIS data expose them to the harms that are somewhat alleged. Harms that include the receipt of spam, the violation of the privacy.
So excluding those who have registered domain names but are not using them for websites.
I would, let me ask you this. If you've registered a domain name and not using it for a website, are you still, is your information on WHOIS still disclosable?
Absolutely.
Yes, certainly.
Yeah, I would think that the broader
then they should be included. Yeah, the broader definition then.
Yeah, I think that Wendy's suggestion is good.
Yes.
Can you repeat that, please, Wendy?
It was just to substitute internet use or domain name use for websites.
Internet use versus domain name use.
Okay, so once you've got that captured, Liz, why don't you read back what you have?
I can't, because I have to go back to Steve's original.
Oh,
I didn't capture it all.
Liz, I would say that public access to Hooey's data is responsible for a material number of cases of misuse that have caused harm to natural persons.
Okay, it's just that I can't type that fast. So if you want me to capture it now, so just go slower, Steve. I have public access to Hooey's data is responsible for a material number of
cases of misuse that have caused harm to natural persons.
Yep. Natural persons whose
websites do not have a commercial purpose.
Whose internet use?
Whose domain name?
Registration. Whose registration? Wendy, would that satisfy? Whose registration did not have a commercial purpose?
Excellent.
Okay, whose registration does not have a commercial purpose? Got it.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
Now, is there any objection to or a further edit to that hypothesis? Okay, very good. And by the way, obviously there are a lot of people that expressed interest in this group that aren't on this call, and these will be available for comment by those people between now and our next meeting. I don't want to go back and revisit all of the ones we've covered, so there will be one shot. Well, I shouldn't be quite so restrictive. Ideally, we'd like to get these resolved and move on, not have to retrace our steps. So, but we will give opportunity for those not on the call to comment on that.
Chuck, this is Lee Elgin. If I could just make one comment.
Surely.
And it's not specific to study suggestion number one, but Steve's point about the, you know, hypothesis that you've put in your sort of stepping off point for discussion versus what was originally in his study suggestion suggests to me that, and obviously we can all, you know, hopefully find this by way of the ICANN website, but before the next call it might be worthwhile to have circulated all of the original hypotheses as actually submitted, you know, by the submitter originally several months ago, because I think it would be worthwhile as we're going through these to compare sort of, you know, the evolution of the hypothesis, of each hypothesis relative to what was originally submitted, because I think it's from what was originally submitted that we can best glean what the intent of the study is.
And I think you're absolutely correctly, but let me put that responsibility on each of us to do that rather than taking a lot of time to go through the more detailed document on these calls, because if we do that, it's going to be extremely it's going to multiply the time we will take to do this many times over. Now, let me also point out that in some cases, hypotheses, in my opinion, were quite clear. In other cases, it's almost impossible to even derive a hypothesis. So that will be more helpful in some cases than others.
So this is Liz. Two things on that. The first is that I think it would be helpful if Glenn sends the link to all the original comments that were submitted, because at this point it's a little bit buried in the archive public forum, and you'll spend some time looking for it. It would, you know, better serve just getting to it. And Glenn and I will point you to that. And then the second thing to be aware of is particularly Chuck referenced it was difficult to derive hypotheses from certain of the submissions, and that's largely the GAC, of course, didn't submit any hypotheses along with their recommendations. So I think everyone else did, whether they're entirely on point or some of them are verbose. So I think it's useful, but just keep in mind that on the GAC ones, we're going to have to surmise together what those hypotheses, you know, how best to articulate those hypotheses.
And in some cases, what I found is that it wasn't so much a hypothesis that was being tested as much as it was a suggestion for gathering some data, which is, I think, a little different thing than a hypothesis to be tested, but we'll get to some of those. Okay.
Chuck, this is Steve Metalitz. Could I make a comment here? I think in light of what Lee said and what we've just been through with number one, it would be useful to, I recognize what Liz said, some of these hypotheses that were proposed by the people who proposed the studies may not be useful, but some of them may well be, and rather than have to go back and readjust based on that, perhaps we should jump ahead to the proposals that don't have hypotheses with them, such as the GAC studies, and do those first, the GAC suggestions, and then return to the others when we actually have what the author, or what the proposer thought was the hypothesis in front of us. Just a suggestion that we would do the GAC ones first, because we know they don't have proposed hypotheses with them.
And I just want to note, Liz, one other complexity here, which is that the way that we amass the study input, unfortunately, doesn't have the names of the submitters on them, and in order to cross-reference, you have to use that other document that we developed that cross-referenced the recommendations, the 25 that were submitted with the actual names of the submitters, which we can send out again. I'm really sorry about this. It makes it like a three-step process to get the answers.
I'm not concerned with the names of the submitters, but just that, as I
recall... Well, you might be, though, because, like, some of those are going to be... The care, for example, that Steve took in developing his hypotheses and certain others that, you know, you're going to be particularly interested in, I think, in capturing and verifying, and then there are others that, you know, you can clearly dismiss on their face.
How easy is it when Glenn sends out the link to this other information to link the study number with the submission?
You know, I thought I captured the original hypotheses somewhere, and I could cut and paste them, you know, into one document so that everyone doesn't have to go through this. I think it's kind of laborious at this point for everyone
to
have to do it.
Yeah, and that's what I was trying to avoid.
I know, but I think, you know, I have a good sense of what's going to be required here, and imagining the 30 of you going off to do that just...
Yeah, right.
So let me do that, and I'll try to get it done today, and...
Steve, I think what I'm going to do is go ahead and proceed in the order that's in front of us, and we'll deal with them as we come to them, because it doesn't sound like it's too easy to and in some cases, some of the GAC studies were things where there was a hypothesis, but I also will flag, at least in my own opinion, where I thought, I put a question mark in a couple places what the hypothesis was. So we can then go back to the sources there. So let's, any other comments on study number one? And I'm going in the order that they are in the table that was sent around, and that was the same order as they were grouped in that one reference document. So next study is study number 14, and to use the abbreviated description of that Liz created was to create a set of new email addresses, use half of them to register domain names and monitor all for spam for 90 days to determine how much Whois information contributes to spam. And what I put there was simply modifications to Whois would be useful in deterring spam and other such illegal or undesirable activities. How would you phrase that one? And again, somebody wants to, I'm not going to try, since I'm leading the meeting, to go back and look at all the detail, but somebody else is welcome to do that.
I mean, this is Lee Elgin. I'm just looking back at the original hypothesis submitted.
Can you read that for us, Lee?
Sure. I just found it online here. The Whois database is used only to a minor extent to generate spam and other such illegal or undesirable activities. Mm-hmm. I mean, I put it out to the group, but I actually like that hypothesis better, with all respect, of course, to you, Chuck, in your efforts to put together these summaries.
I'm not sensitive to that, so don't worry about that part.
Okay.
So read that again, please.
Sure. The Whois database is used only to a minor extent to generate spam and other such illegal or undesirable activities.
Isn't that the mirror image of the hypothesis we stated for number one, and thereby can they not be combined?
What do you think? A discussion?
I think the real question is the extent, whether it's major or minor. That's what a study should tell us. That's the reason for a study.
Number one says there are a significant number of misuse cases. So,
I use the word material in an accounting sense.
Right.
This is Steve. Even if I'm having a lot of trouble understanding this, even if the hypotheses can be put together or are mirror images of each other, as I understand it just from the summary, there are two totally different things being suggested here. One says you create new email addresses and you see if spam results. And the other is you go to people that would already have historically collected this information and ask them, have there been problems? Now, those are two totally different ways of proceeding, so I'm not sure when we say we're going to combine or we might combine the hypotheses, how does that correlate with the fact that the methodology proposed is different in the two cases?
Good point. And I wonder if what if we were to use the hypotheses that Lee just read to us that was in the original submission and maybe just put a parenthetical, this may be related to study one. That doesn't mean that it shouldn't be a separate study, but just to so that for the council's benefit when they see this list, they would also see that we noted the similarity.
One of the things that we talked about was sort of the next steps, which would be that, you know, staff would have to go off and determine once any were selected and figure out the cost and feasibility. And so one possibility, I mean, one rationale for grouping these together would be to then turn to staff, you know, probably an expert that staff would identify, who would then help define, well, which approach would gather the most accurate information or what are the benefits. And you know, we would go back to the original proposals and say, okay, of these three in this one category, if this category were selected, then what's the methodology that would yield the best, most accurate, most useful, most cost-effective, the feasibility questions, and look at, you know, look at the studies within each category that way.
Can I make a comment, Chuck?
Sure, Tony.
Yeah, just thinking on this, I don't think your idea is all that bad, actually, because if these new email addresses are created specifically related to Whois, and they're not used in any other manner, in other words, they don't become an email user, they're not given out in different activities, which normally a person would, his email would turn up when he buys something, when he makes a reservation. And we don't know how many people we sell this information, how many companies we sell them. So actually, you would have, if you had spam originated from these email addresses, which whose only function is to be included in the Whois, you really know that that spam, you know, it's coming from there. It's not coming from some list that, you know, Visa resold to somebody, okay?
And this is Liz. Wasn't that exactly what the FX study did?
Yes, it is. And this is Steve DelBianco. I wanted to remind everybody that our charter is to look at hypotheses and not necessarily specify the kind of a study that would be used to falsify the hypothesis. We all did that in our submission, but in this particular case, are we really supposed to go beyond the hypothesis and suggest the type of study that's necessary?
No, and I think that the reason we went down that path is Steve Metallis's point is that we have to be careful about combining the hypotheses because of the fact that the methodology may be different and so forth. So, but you're right, Steve DelBianco, that's not our task.
And to Liz's point, the SX study did show that when registrars use CAPTCHA technologies to prevent harvesting of email addresses, that it significantly reduced, if not eliminated, spam that arrived at those email addresses.
Now,
this is Tim.
Go ahead, Tim. I think that's Tim.
I think that the good point was made that, you know, getting into debate over whether there's previous studies that have done this or not or what the results were is all kind of outside of the scope of what we're supposed to be doing. And then the other issue I would have with trying to combine would be, especially in this case, study 14 seems to be dealing primarily with spam, but I think, if I understand Steve correctly, the study 1 could be misuses other than spam. you know, that it isn't just spam that could potentially cause harm to natural persons. So it seems like there are different studies, and each has a different hypothesis. And I would prefer we just look at them individually and assign hypothesis and try not to do too much combining.
Now, I think it is okay if we add some parenthetical notes that might be useful to the council without getting into any elaborate process of how they're going to be done or whatever. So anything that can be useful to the council as they study these hypotheses might be useful. But our main, our primary task, our really only task is to convert each of these studies into a hypothesis or two that needs to be tested. Now, back to the question I asked before then. Is there any discomfort with Lee's suggestion to use the wording from the original study proposal? I also then added a parenthetical that this might be related to study one, but, and maybe we need to qualify that and say, but may not be another, but may need to be a separate study, or we can just leave the parenthetical out. What are your thoughts?
Chuck, this is Lee again. Just regarding the parenthetical, and this is, you know, from the original working group, we did talk quite a bit about the ability of a lot of the studies to potentially be combined, or the relation between, you know, certain of the studies to others, other of the studies. And I think what came of that was not sort of going to a parenthetical, just citing those specific relationships, but rather, I think it was Liz who put together who grouped these studies into the seven or eight areas. So I think if we end up starting to go down the road of putting parentheticals on each one, we'll end up putting an awful lot of parentheticals, whereas I think they're already somewhat grouped by, you know, in accordance with their subject area.
That makes sense to me. Is there anybody that's opposed to using the wording that Lee read for us from the original submission? Lee, you want to read that again, please?
Sure. The WHOIS database is used only to a minor extent to generate spam and other such illegal or undesirable activities.
Any discomfort or suggested edits to that hypothesis for number 14?
Alan, I have a slight discomfort with the use minor. You know, the use of WHOIS in general is so vast that how do we recognize minor use?
Comments?
Well, presumably, if you did what this study suggests, and you monitored for spam for 90 days, and there was none, or almost none, I'm not defining what almost none
that,
is.
That I grant would be minor.
That would prove the hypothesis, and if there was a lot of spam, then that would disprove the hypothesis. I mean, without getting into how you would draw those lines, but I think that's how it would work.
I think the study designer, too, if it was decided to pursue this particular study further, is going to have to come up with some definition of minor.
Yes.
So your point's well taken, Alan, that obviously there's a term there that's going to need definition. I think the hypothesis is clear enough, even though there's that ambiguity there, that a decision could be made whether, assuming minor could be appropriately defined, the information that would be gained from the study would be useful or not.
I think the intent is clear. The wording I don't like, but I'm willing to live with it, with the assumption that whoever's going to do the next step will look for intent, not wording.
Right, and I think that's a fair assumption. Any other comments on number 14? Okay. Let's go to 15. And if somebody wants to look that one up in the original, that's good, too. You're probably way ahead of me on that. But in Liz's study submission number 15, it said, create a set of new email addresses. Use them to register new domain names at registrars that allow and disallow port 43 WHOIS queries, and monitor all for spam to determine the extent to which port 43 WHOIS queries contribute to spam. Now, it is, I can avoid even reading mine that I put there if somebody's got the original hypothesis wording. Anybody
yeah, I've got it.
Okay, Liz?
Those using WHOIS data, it's actually very similar to what's there. Those using WHOIS data to facilitate illegal or undesirable activities such as spam depend on port 43 access to WHOIS to obtain WHOIS data.
Okay. And I had said most use of WHOIS associated illegal undesirable activities is traceable to data mining over port 43. I'm okay with the wording that Liz just read. What's the preferences of the group?
This is Lee. I like the original.
Okay. Anybody opposed to the original?
This is Tim. I can live with either one, actually.
Yeah, I think they say pretty much they're very similar in terms of the main thrust, but as long as the original is clear, I think that's good. So one more time on that one, Lee.
Those using WHOIS data to facilitate illegal or undesirable activities such as spam depend on port 43 access to WHOIS to obtain WHOIS data.
Any objections to that or additional changes? Okay. Going to 21, and I kind of lumped 21 and GAC 2 together, so whether I was right or not on that, and I came up with an awfully broad hypothesis there, too. But 21 was survey registrars and human rights organizations to determine how WHOIS is being used in ways that seem to have no bearing on the security and stability of the DNS. And then the GAC bullet number 2 was the types and extent of misuses of WHOIS data and the harm caused by each type of misuse, including economic use of WHOIS data in spam generation, abuse of personal data, loss of reputation, or identity theft, security costs, and loss of data. So, is the study submission number 21 helpful in terms of a clear and concise hypothesis?
It's not concise. but it's clear or not, I'll leave up to you guys. That the public WHOIS databases are ready and often used sources of personal data for those seeking to harass, abuse, or stalk individuals and organizations. That the public WHOIS databases are being used and mined regularly by direct mail and related companies for their commercial benefit to compile personal data, which they then use, combine, sell, and distribute as massive lists and databases.
Is there more than one hypothesis there?
I mean, it sounds to me that like you could combine the, you know, if you agree that it's all bad behavior, the use and mining of the information by direct mail and related companies for commercial benefit, and some may not think so, then you could combine that with the harass, abuse, and stalk, that there's, you know, malfeasance of these various kinds, and that WHOIS is a source of that. But that may not be a consensus of the group.
Now, I see something I would do differently in that very brief hypothesis I wrote. I put there are abuses of public display of WHOIS. I think I would say there are significant abuses of public display of WHOIS. And you're right, Alan, we'd have to define significant. But is that too simplified?
As it's summarized, submission 21 isn't referencing who public display of WHOIS. Is that in the? I didn't catch whether that's in the hypothesis that the proposer.
It is that the public WHOIS databases.
Okay, all right.
I mean, one thing that you could say about abuses, you could spell out the different kinds of abuses, or you could parenthetically describe the kinds of abuses. But you suggested material abuses.
I said my edit to my own.
Yeah.
I think I said significant, but it's not either one's fine. Okay. I think probably it's more significant. In other words, there's a lot of abuses, abuses of coming from it that it's a problem. I mean, if it finds out to be very minor, you know, let's say there's 1%, only a level of 1% of abuses, then it's not near the same problem if we find 20%, you know, something like that. What's the leaning of the group in terms of this? I'd rather not have too lengthy a hypothesis if we can avoid it for simplicity's sake, but maybe we can't avoid it in some cases. What's the thinking of the group?
Chuck, you could replace of with cause by. There's a causal thing here that's not...
That's fine. Is the abbreviated form, there are significant abuses...
Caused
by public display of who is sufficient for this?
I just wonder whether that's going to be meaningful to the council if they want to understand what this proposal is about.
Do you think it would help to call out some of the specific, you know, for harassment, abuse, and also commercial marketing? I mean, does that help in any way to make it more apparent on its face?
I mean, I think it gives a clearer picture of what that proposer was driving at anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And if you read, this is Steve Delbonte, if you read some of the proposals that were submitted, the proposers, at least I did on number one, I anticipated that we would need to consult other sources, like consumer protection agencies, see if people have been complaining about the harassment to police and consumer protection groups. I didn't think we would get much data there. And it was the further refinement of understanding that if we test hypotheses like, is there abuse and is there spam, we're testing it vacuum here because in many respects, as far as the use capture and other data masking techniques can actually cut down on the incidence of it. So we are testing something that already has certain other remedies, not to mention the fact that to the extent to which people avail themselves of proxy registration for privacy protection, then they're one level removed from getting spam as well. So some of the things we're testing only answer these threshold questions that were discussed 2 years ago, which were things like, is who is responsible for a lot of spam and abuse? And answering that question 2 years later really confuses things because things like CAPTCHA and proxy have already mitigated to some extent what's going on here today in the marketplace.
Excuse me, I'm going to interrupt just a second. Somebody is handling some dishes or something, and if you could mute your phone, it would be.
I wonder helpful. If it's me typing.
No, it doesn't sound
it's
like
it's someone stacking and washing
the dishwasher.
Yeah.
I wish it was here.
Yeah. So, no, you're typing. That doesn't sound like typing. But anyway, thank you for doing that. Now, Steve, do you have a suggestion how you would do this one?
Chuck, when we do the hypothesis, you may need to clarify for counsel whether the hypothesis you seek to test is a hypothesis of unprotected who is, or who is by registrars that do use capture to protect it. That could end up being a very important distinction because some of the hypotheses anticipate that there are measures that the market has already evolved that mitigate the abuses we were concerned about 2 years ago.
Isn't this study, though, assuming that there's public display of who is in contrast to a proxy service where the information's not there?
Chuck, I don't think it assumes that necessarily because when we put together the test group, the test group will include registrars that use CAPTCHA, and CAPTCHA stops machines from harvesting the email addresses. And secondarily, there are used proxy registration, and both will get mixed in with the study group. They'll get mixed in with the test group, and we won't really have a better sense of what the data shows.
Liz, I think I have a suggestion to Steve Metallica's concern, but Steve Del Bianco, how would you, to me it seems like the issue you're highlighting would get picked up in other studies that have been proposed. Do you think there's something in this study that needs to capture, so to speak, some aspect that's not there now?
Right, and the point is do the hypotheses anticipate a plain, visible to the public, harvestable who is, with or without proxy. And I don't know that I can do it right now, but we probably ought to re-examine the hypotheses to see whether they should be clarified to say that, for instance, unprotected who is, that it does not use proxy is causing a material amount of abuse to run non-commercial websites.
But wouldn't that be, in a sense, captured the concept, at least, by public display of who is?
But public display, CAPTCHA is public display.
That's true.
As a member of the public, So you maneuver a registrar who uses CAPTCHA, and if I, as a person, type in those CAPTCHA characters, I get public display of who it is. It is public. It's just not machine readable. It's not machine harvestable.
If I might jump in, Wendy.
Go ahead, Wendy.
Maybe just to suggest that we break the hypothesis out into do various measures change the susceptibility of abuse? And the various measures could be all of the different things that have been discussed. The CAPTCHA, the closing of Port 43, the use or non-use of different types of proxy registrations, and the test set would be comparing registrations across those various kinds of protections.
What about that approach? Comment?
Is that what was proposed in this study in 21?
No. This 21 was really more limited, which is to measure the extent to which public access is being used for either the harassment and stalking type of abuse or the marketing massive database type of abuse. That's what the original study focused on.
Are we tied to that original study?
I think that there might be other... I think we should hang on to this idea and look to see if it's captured in other studies. So right now, I have the two questions in both, but we could do a placeholder and see if it...
Now, how did you capture Steve's mentality?
Yeah, what I did with Steve's is just a parenthetical for now, which we can always modify, but what I wrote was, there are significant abuses, parentheses, including harassment, stalking, et cetera, as well as to compile massive lists for marketing purposes, close paren, caused by public display of who is. And we could say that more artfully, but at least to capture the concept that abuse, basically defining what significant abuses are.
Comments on that?
Yeah, this is Tim.
Go ahead, Tim.
I think I'm not real comfortable with making, you know, I think what Liz read is okay, but I wouldn't be comfortable with making too many other modifications to the intended hypothesis for the.
So what I did, though, Tim, is actually just extract from the original.
Hold on. Let Tim finish.
Sorry.
Yes, please. Thank you. But what I would be, and I just said I don't have a problem with what Liz just suggested or read, but I'm concerned about, I agree with Steve's concerns, but I think the way to handle those is that maybe instead of having a lot of individual parentheticals on the studies, that I think what Steve's concern is about, CAPTCHA and privacy and how those might have had effect, that would be maybe a comment that we could make in regards to this entire area, because that's something that would probably apply to all these studies.
I would agree, Tim. I agree with you.
So I'm not sure I'm clear then on what the suggestion is.
That we don't try to get too handy with the hypotheses that if one exists, and that instead a concern like what Steve raised, that we make a general comment about the studies in Area 1 that says that some, you know, something that may need to be considered in regards to the studies in Area 1 would be the use of CAPTCHA and privacy or proxy services and how that might affect the hypotheses or the outcome, whatever. But make it as a general statement
right.
In regards to...
Okay, I got it. Is anybody opposed to that approach? Then let me suggest, Steve DelBianco, would you email to Liz a little general statement to that effect? And if you want to work with him to finalize it, that's fine. I'll let you guys decide that. And then that could be a comment for Area 1 or wherever we want to put it when we get done.
Sure.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Are we okay then with the language that Liz had there for now? And by the way, Liz, what I would do, I think instead of having that parenthetical that really breaks up the hypothesis, is I would add a follow-on sentence or maybe use a semicolon and then just provide, for example, or something like that rather than interrupting the hypothesis, just format issue.
Got it.
Apologies. Is that okay? That makes sense?
To what extent are we really trying to make these hypotheses worded as an hypothesis instead of a statement around the area.
I would like to see them be a hypothesis. Do you have a suggestion in that regard?
Not with regard to this one, but I was just thinking of the caveat that we just said we'll do in a general one. You know, if we were adding it to this one as a hypothesis, we would say capture privacy, proxy services mitigate the misuse of WHOIS information, and that has been proven or disproven. But a lot of these we're starting off with ifs, and it's not really a hypothesis.
Yeah, you know, I agree.
What extent are we worried about that?
But I'm not sure that Steve and Tim were talking about actually putting a hypothesis.
No, I was just using that as an example.
Yeah, okay, all right, okay. But I agree with you, Alan, that we should word them as hypotheses. So it's a statement.
See, that may limit their usefulness in some cases where it's not going to be a black-white answer. But
well, I'm sure in a lot of cases it won't be a black-and-white answer, but that's what happens when you do a study.
Chuck, this is Steve. Could I get in the queue?
Sure, go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I just think, I mean, this discussion we're having now, I think we still have a lot of good ideas about what might be useful studies, but I think the charter we've been given, I find this frustrating too, but I think the charter that we've been given, we're not supposed to consider whether these would be useful studies or whether there are ways to modify them to be more useful. It's
That's
simply
correct.
To try to extract the hypothesis. I think we had a study group where that was more relevant, but in this group, I don't think we're asked to do that.
Agreed.
I just want to point out, though, on the specific issue that Steve raised, if you look at Area 5A, it does basically pose that question. So the good news is I think it's captured in that concept. More restrictive WHOIS display requirements would lead to more crime and abuse.
Is that a separate
I missed that.
Yep. I just meant to say that the issue that I think Steve was particularly highlighting, which is the various measures like capture change the susceptibility of WHOIS to abuse.
You know, what I was saying is I missed the comment just after you.
Oh.
Someone said something.
Liz, is what you said previously, is that a separate hypothesis in this?
Yeah, it's down on Area 5A. It's study notes. Recommendation 6 in GAC number 1.
Oh, okay. So
impact of WHOIS on crime and abuse.
So we don't need to cover it here, or we do?
I think that it's something that, I mean, if Steve and Tim, who were raising the concern, agree, I think we could basically move the rephrased question down to that point, and when we get there, see if it's, fully encompassed by...
Steve and Tim, does that make sense to you? Does that make sense to you?
This is Steve. I thought Tim started to capture it more accurately to say this, that any of the tests that are done for hypotheses in Area 1 should be clear as to whether they're testing registrations that are done with and without proxy and registrations that are done with registrars to employ capture protection mechanisms. We're really not saying that we have a hypothesis that it matters. What we're saying is that any tests done to judge those hypotheses have to be explicit about including data in their sample that includes both CAPTCHA, non-CAPTCHA, proxy, non-proxy. That way the data set that comes back can answer multiple questions later on.
You're simply saying that the study must be cognizant of the fact that there are methodologies that are being used and should not ignore them in doing the test, in doing the study.
Yes.
Either factor them in or exclude them, but not ignore that they may or may not have been used.
And given a chance, I would say definitely factor them in, and the sample should include groups of registrations that are done with proxies, groups that are not, groups that are done with capture-based registrars, and groups that are not. The data set from those four answers come back, you have a much better idea of how to formulate policy going ahead.
Okay. Let me see. Again, send an email to Liz with that comment. And for right now, we'll leave it associated with Area 1. We can decide, because that's a little bit out of our scope, it still may be useful to provide to the council. We can decide where to fit it in when we get through the whole exercise. So is everyone still there?
Some of us are, plus it's an annoying noise.
Okay.
Can I suggest as we go along, instead of debating for each one the exact changes, that if we have thoughts that come up that may be relevant in further analysis, put them in square brackets or something that could be
okay.
A comment this committee, this working group has come up with, which may or may not be relevant, but let's not debate it each time.
Yeah. I think it will vary depending on the issue, but I don't have any problem with that to the extent. As much as we can narrow it down, I'd like us to get some closure.
Certainly.
If it becomes too time-consuming, I think your suggestion is good. Now, last on Area 1, which is probably where we'll have to wrap it up today, is GAC Bullet 2. Is that really encompassed in number 21? What do people think? Should we send Suzanne Sen an email and say, hey, you know, we concluded that this GAC recommendation really fits with this hypothesis? Do you agree with that, or would you change it differently? Thinking on that?
Well, this is Steve. Maybe one way to address it would be to include in the parenthetical or after the semicolon, whatever Liz uses, the examples that are given in GAC bullet number 2.
Not a bad idea. Any opposition to that?
Sorry, what would I do?
When you're listing the harms or the, you know, examples of the misuse, you could list the things that are listed in GAC bullet number 2.
I see.
Make sense?
Yeah, so I would move it up to 21.
Just
is it combined?
So we wouldn't have a separate entry for GAC 2 at this point.
Right. We may want to leave the way the table is right now so that it's clear that we haven't ignored it, but it is a reference back to 21. Yeah.
Great. I will do that.
Okay. Now, a suggestion for moving forward. Would it be useful if we divided up some of these hypotheses and assign different small groups of individuals? It could be one, it could be a couple people, to take a stab at going back to the original and putting forward a hypothesis before our next meeting.
I thought that Liz had volunteered to give us a three-column table or something like that, also showing the original hypothesis.
Is that correct, Liz?
Yeah, I'll do that.
Okay.
I mean, it's going to take some time. If we don't need to do that, I won't. But, you know, I'm happy to do it just to make it easier so that everyone doesn't have to do it.
Well,
Lee and I just...
I think that's a good suggestion, but if we could get some volunteers to work on at least areas 2 and 3 for our next meeting and not waiting for Liz to get that thing out, I think that would facilitate our time next week. Are there some volunteers?
This is James. I'll go ahead and volunteer.
And do you want to take one of those areas or both? What, James? What are you?
Depending on if I'm solo, I can take area 2.
Okay. Anybody want to do area 2 with James? Hey, James, you've got area 2. How about a volunteer for area 3? And again, you can totally ignore what I did there. If it's useful, good. If it's not, don't worry about it.
Chuck, Steve Dabianco, I'll volunteer for 3.
Okay, excellent. While we're at it, let me maybe just being probably overly optimistic, anybody want to take Area 4? I won't push for that one, but if there's a volunteer, I'll take it. Okay.
This is Tim. I'll do Area 4.
Okay, good. And then if you can distribute those on the list, and you're welcome to use the wiki, too, to post things if that works for you, but certainly on the list. So that you can, and if you want to use the, use the table format, that portion of the table that you want, and then insert them, or however is convenient for you, just so it's clear for the team, that would be great. Our next meeting then will be a week from today, same time. We'll shoot for an hour and a half, and we'll pick up where we left off. I'll allow a little bit of time for any comments from people who weren't on the call or any discussion that occurred on the list on Area 1, although I don't want to, you know, retrace our steps there. To the extent that we need to, we'll spend a little bit of time on that, and we'll jump right into Area 2. Any questions or comments? Okay, thanks, everybody. And Liz, a question for you. Then in terms of the you'll paste what we've done into the
wiki. Yeah, I'll paste what we've done into the wiki right now.
And you'll distribute the redline Word version as well?
Yes. And I'll do that, I can do that now, or I can do that a little later when I do the other document.
As soon as possible, and
okay.
Then I'll maybe hold off to do my little meeting summary until I see at least the Word
okay.
redline.
Okay. Great.
Thank you, everybody. Talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.